Remember the first time you saw a race car on an open trailer? Maybe it was full of dirt, tire marks, and other battle scars. You wondered where it had been, and more importantly, where it was going next. Every open trailer has a story, and we're here to tell it. Welcome to the Open Trailer Podcast. Well, thank you for checking out and ultimately checking in to another edition of Open Trailer Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Austin, and this is actually, before I reveal the number, I'm going to ask you, how many episodes do you think we have under our belt? Yeah, what's your best thinking tell you? Mine was flat wrong. I was somewhere in the 40s. It's actually episode number 58. Appreciate the support. You obviously, the kind words, the encouragement, really it makes all the difference in the world. If nobody gave it, I mean, I want to get this stuff preserved and I do enjoy doing it. But if nobody gave a damn, I know we wouldn't have made it to 58, that's for sure. So however you're supporting, whether it's through Patreon, patreon.com/opentrailerpodcast, always like to give that a little plug. But I also want to talk about the power of a share. And I ironically can't talk about the power of a share on the platform that you'd be sharing. I can't make any sense of it. I don't make the rules. But I know that if you say, please share this link on Facebook. Facebook is like, no. I know it's good for our business. Well, it's probably not good for their business, actually. And I don't know why, but then again, I don't get paid to understand the internet. For whatever reason, they will knock down the reach if you say, please share this link. I don't know if they think it's spam or if it's like two for the... You know what? If they think it's two for the price of one and they're so against shares, well, why the f*** do they put it on their website? It's bizarre. Anyway, just have to talk about it on the audio product. So power of a share, just, you know, letting your following know that this podcast exists and you enjoyed it. If you see me out at a racetrack and you want an Open Trailer Podcast decal, then let me know. I probably have some in the back seat. So anyway, we can get the word out and, you know, continue to highlight the heroes that we do every single episode, like Chummy Brown. You know, the episode for Chummy Brown, here's the power of a share. Chum, while a legend, isn't as much of a household name as, you know, other people we've had on the podcast. But I'm not going to share the specific numbers, but let's just say out of, you know, the 57 episodes that we've had, first week listens on episode one for Chummy Brown were the third highest rated that weren't season debuts. Meaning there really wasn't a big rollout. I didn't even have time to do a hype video. And I'm recording this open on a Monday for the Patreon drop on Tuesday. And eventually this will be Open Trailer Thursday. I hope to have time to put together a hype video for episode two. Sometimes they happen, sometimes they don't. It's, I don't know, there's only so many hours in the day. The point being, just get the word out. It really, really helps, and I can't stress how much your support by either hitting the share button, hitting the like button, it really makes a huge difference. So thank you on that. Also, want to say thank you, sincere gratitude to Rusty Poland for being an anchor in this project. I mean, Rusty, as pointed out in the podcast, is the one who did the work, the grunt work to let the committee know. The committee that would eventually put his grandfather in the May Motorsports Hall of Fame, where he was voted in a couple of years ago. And, you know, just having some of the great knowledge nuggets that he has. He just really, you know, Rusty soaks up history and carries the family tradition really, really strong. And you can just tell loves his grandfather. And I'm sure this was a great project for them, but it was so neat for me to just sit back and watch the whole thing unfold. As far as specifics go, Chum's a great storyteller. You know this from listening to episode one. He continues on this path where he talks about, you know, having a full-time employee on a weekly car was really a luxury. Still a luxury today. But, I mean, it was a big luxury. And who did they come to? First guy on the list, Chummy Brown. He tells that story and how that business ran. More J2 information. Chum pulls rank on his son-in-law, Wayne Poland. Hilarious story. And there was that one time that Chum did try to retire. Oh, yeah, and a couple years ago, fell flat on his face at Star Speedway, got right up, kept on going. Because that's Chum. It is episode number 2 of Open Trailer Podcast. Enjoy. You know, we talk about you straightening out that race car. You know, you took it upon yourself and you know, you had the success and everything. But one thing that wasn't brought to light is the fact that that was your full-time job.
Right.
So to have a full-time person working on a race car in the 70s almost seemed kind of unheard of. How did you get that job?
Well, Jerry asked me if I wanted to do it, and he says, you won't have to worry about a job.
Hmm.
And he built that brand new garage down there and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And he wanted me to go to work and run that. And I said, I don't know as I can do that, Jerry. He says, no. He says, it ain't going to be nothing against you. He says, I want you to run a business there, and I want the race car right there. So another guy I got involved with was Pete Silvers.
Pete Silva.
Pete Silva.
Mm-hmm.
Jim Stepp and I built a brand new Chevelle.
For Pete?
No, for no. Homer.
For Homer Drew, yeah.
And Homer didn't like it. So Jerry wanted to sell it. Well, Pete Silva's bought it. And I went up to the race at Wiscasset. That's how I met Pete.
Mm.
And I says, so how's that car go? Piece of junk, he says.
I can hear him saying that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Piece of junk. He says, it's like an old farm tractor. And I says, oh, come on.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I says, you know, we built, Jim Stepp and I built that in Jerry's shop.
Right.
I says, and I told Jim at the time that you couldn't build a car on jack stands. Hmm. And he says, well, we're gonna. And I said, okay. And the car never went good. And I went up to Wiscasset, and we had, Jerry had sold it to Pete Silvers.
Hmm.
And I said to him, I said, have you ever done anything with this since you bought off CV? He said, not really. He says, I did a couple of different things to the car. And I says, like what? And he says, well, he says, when Jerry told me that you guys built it on 4 jack stands, he said, the car probably wasn't great.
Yeah.
And I said, yep. And I says, the first thing I'd have done to that, if it was me, he says, what's that? I says, cut the roll cage on the back where it goes to the back of the frame. I says, cut that right off.
Hmm.
Whatever it comes down or goes up. I says, when it comes up, cut it so it still meets the roll cage. Cut it off, reweld it, go racing.
Wow. Yeah.
He won 3 championships in a row.
Yeah.
With that car.
Wow. It just blows my mind that, like, you know, where I still don't know where you learn all this stuff. Because you had an interest in baseball, you had an interest in history and math, and racing was just something that you did, right? But that's something that's some Jedi stuff right there.
Oh, yeah. And I just put up with it and stuff, and Jerry. Yeah. Mother got bad off, and she told Jerry, you got to get rid of that race car. So we did.
Tell me about your experience with Pete Peterson.
Pete was a good mechanic.
Hmm.
And he knew a lot about the cars and everything. but he had a good guy that worked with him. And they used to call him, oh heck, I can't even think of his name now. But he had some weird stuff that I had never seen before. Mm. And Speedy. Speedy was the guy's name. That's what they called him.
Okay.
And he put a chain drive steering in that thing and stuff. And I mean, yeah. How he ever handled it and stuff, I don't know. But yeah. He did.
So Pete's stuff was always really, really clean.
Oh, yeah.
And so was Jerry's. So I'm thinking common denominator, you. Have you always been, I've seen, the 44 team as it is today. It's pretty clean shop. Is that a big key to success, is having a clean race car and a clean setup?
Well, when you get sponsors, you got to support the sponsor. Mm. If you want to keep them.
How early did you learn that?
I was pretty good in that, and I won 7 best-looking trophy awards at Beach Ridge in my doings. My nephew, he got killed on the snowmobile. Roger Hanscom asked me, he says, who painted that car? I says, my nephew.
Hmm. Who was your nephew?
George Emerson. Yeah. And somebody, we had it in the car show.
The main mall.
Hmm. And somebody come down and told me, Mike Maeda was one of them. Mike took me outdoors. And he says, I got something you probably don't want to hear. Hmm. He says, but I got to tell you, Georgie was just killed on a snowmobile. Hmm. I lost it.
Yeah.
He was one of my best ones, only Rusty.
Just to back up a little bit and talk about the mall show and how big of a deal that was. I think, people will see it on Facebook and old Beach Ridge Facebook memories. They'll see old photos of it. But for someone who lived it and as someone who looked forward to it every single year, can you tell us how much preparation went into that mall show every year?
A lot. When Ralph had it, he put a lot of money into it. And Calvin had it, he put a lot of money in it. And then I got Stevie Reynolds into driving for me. In the Nova I bought off from Stan Meserve.
Hmm.
And Calvin told me, the only thing you got to do is this before you let him drive it. He says, put a bar across the roof. I says, why? And he says, anybody come in that roof upside down would kill him.
Yeah.
He says, and I don't want that. I said, okay. So Calvin was one of my best sponsors. Mm-hmm. He gave me everything I wanted.
Yeah.
And then some. And Calvin says, I'm going to put this amount of money in checking account. When it gets down to $800, we'll bring it back up.
How much money?
$1,000. Every race.
Oh, okay. All right. So I was trying to figure out how much he would do it for the year, how much you guys spending on. Yeah.
And he said, whatever you need, tires, whatever, just go by and bring me the bill.
Wow. Imagine having someone like that, Rusty.
Yeah, that'd make things a little bit different.
It would have been good,
yeah.
Wouldn't it?
Yeah.
It still would be, but.
Yeah.
And I've worked for everybody that's owned a racetrack.
Yeah.
Beach Ridge Motor Speedway.
Yeah, I mean, let's, we obviously jump around here with your chum. You work for Ralph Cusack in a very interesting role. And I think anybody who was a fan in the 80s, had an experience, or at least visually, with a Ride of Your Life car. And the Ride of Your Life car has been talked about on the podcast before, but for those that aren't familiar, Ralph, who had won 12 track championships, now the owner of the Speedway, would sit in the driver's seat, and in the passenger seat, they would take a lucky fan around and go out there and compete, which I think is pretty amazing. Insurance companies might not like to hear it, but that's how
No, they didn't want him to do it after that.
No, even then. But boy, there was an experience that you had in the ride of your life car.
Yeah.
Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, that was my wife.
Yeah, so what happened?
Well, Ralph was going down the backstretch. It was under caution. And he says to Sheila, he says, if I take off my glasses, he says, will you clean them? Sheila says, yeah.
In the middle of the race?
Yeah.
Wow. Under caution.
And she says, yeah. And she cleaned his glasses and gave them back to him. Well, the caution was all over.
Yeah.
They started green again. Went down the backstretch, and a guy from Wyndham, he had a body shop.
Yeah. We probably needed it.
Well, he did.
Yeah.
Well, it wrecked a car.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Yeah, but not just all was, 4 wheels.
It was spectacular.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what happened to the race car that night?
Oh, geez.
Pretty sure he flipped over, didn't he?
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure he flipped over, didn't he?
Oh, yeah, he flipped over on the backstretch.
Ride of your life.
With my wife in it.
Yeah.
And the crew didn't know what to do.
Yeah.
How to get him out of the car. And I said, get out of the way. I said, my wife is in that car. He said, okay. So I got in the car. I took care of Sheila because I looked over at Ralph and he had blood coming out his ears and everything else. And I told Sheila, I says, I'm going to back up to you with my back. I said, now, why don't you unbuckle the seatbelts? I'll lower you down out of the car, get you on the ground, and then I'll work on Ralph. She says, well, he still owes me a race. And I said, Mom, don't worry about the goddamn race car.
That's awesome.
Don't worry about that.
Yeah.
All I care about getting Ralph out.
Mm-hmm.
So I got in there, and they see it was pretty easy.
Mm.
And I did the same thing with Ralph. Got him down. They brought him out on the stretcher. He had a fractured skull, and he had, he was a mess for a while. And I took the car to my house.
Yeah, because you were the mechanic of the ride of your life car.
Yeah. Plus my own car. Cars that I was working on, too.
How many cars were you working on? This is early 80s?
Oh. I worked on Glenn's for 7 years.
Were you part of the Cherry Coke team or predate?
Yeah.
You were part of the Cherry Coke team?
Yep.
Well, that was one of the... Jeez, this is something I didn't know.
Glenn's car.
I remember. Like, as a kid growing up in the grandstands, that's, you know, you talk about the best in show cars. Everyone always wanted to see what Glenn had for that race car. Were those your race cars that you helped design?
I worked on them.
Yeah, we talk about the cleanliness of them.
Yeah.
You know, best in show.
Yeah.
Wow.
And then we took that. The day after that, Ralph got out and he come to my house. Want to know how Sheila was doing and everything. He was more worried about him than he was himself.
Mm-hmm.
And I told him, you haven't got to worry, Ralph. Everything is all set.
Yep.
She's been to doctors. She's been checked over. She's fine.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he was kind of worried, thinking he may get sued.
Right.
And no way I'd do it. Glenn says, he's going to be out for a while. He says, but we got somebody, Bruce Elder, was coming in to...
Where was Bruce coming in?
He was coming in to... work a shop.
Oh, okay. All
and
right.
Plus he was an announcer.
Yeah, yeah. And I never knew that he worked for Ralph.
The only ones I haven't worked for that owns the track was Andy. But.
Yeah, so that's a pretty incredible story. So you work with Glenn and Late Model Sportsman, in the mid-80s, and we just had Bob Randall on, Rick Zemla. That was quite the division.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about what those days were like?
Well, those were good days. Bob Randall was a good good show. Rick Zemmler, yeah, I heard that broadcast the other night.
Jeez, boy, you stay right up on that.
Oh, yeah.
You know Blake Shelton, you know Garth Brooks, you've listened to the podcast.
Yeah.
I'm impressed, 85 years old.
Yeah. Rusty knows I'm pretty interested in racing, pretty much it.
So
I told him probably 3 years ago that I was going to retire, and walked up to shop every day. Yeah.
He made it about 6 weeks.
Huh?
You made about 6 weeks of retiring, and that was it.
Yeah. What do you do in your retirement?
Nothing.
Right.
Nothing.
Right.
I didn't have no car to work on, nothing.
Right. Just blueberry muffins all day. Yeah.
So I went back. I joined the club again.
Yeah.
Everybody says, I thought you retired. I says, whenever you get to be my age, I says, it's a hard job to retire. I says, because this is my life. And this is the way it's going to be until the day they put me in the ground.
In the 90s, you work with your dad?
Yep.
Yeah.
You tell us about you working with Wayne Poland.
Yeah.
I wouldn't work with him for the longest time to start with.
Yeah.
He let dad struggle for about 3 or 4 years before he finally had to put his arm around him. Let me show you the ropes here, old boy.
Why'd you wait for so long?
Wayne was, he knew what he was doing.
Mm-hmm.
And all that stuff, and then every race that he was in, Wayne was never a driver to get up on that bot.
Right.
Green flag, whatever. So he went out one night, and I got ticked off at him. Come in the pit. I went down, ripped a Nendo wick, window net out. I said, get out and let me show you how it's done.
In the 90s?
Yeah.
Okay.
And he said, go for it. So he got at work and he got up against a gauze exhaust pipe or something.
That's like telling another man he sucks at starting a campfire and you're going to build his campfire. That's so emasculating.
Yeah.
And this is your son-in-law.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
But I says, I made him give me his fire suit. I got in the car, didn't I, Rusty?
Oh, yeah, there's pictures.
I got in the car.
Yeah. Didn't end well.
And Wayne says, you might have to go out and practice the car. He says, because I don't know that I can do it with this burn on my back or not. And I says, okay. So I went down, me and Ange, Rusty. We all went down. I get buckled in. Well, I guess I got to live up to this now.
Yeah. When's the last time that you had been in the car?
Oh, long time. Long time.
Like decades.
Yeah. Right. So I got in the car for the heat, for the practice. Mm-hmm. I went out and practiced good with it and everything. Didn't get in no trouble. I says, well, Wayne come in the racetrack. He walked up to Angela and he says, who the hell is in the car? She said, Dad, you're
About 5 laps later, the axle broke and off over turn one, Chum went.
Oh, and I was leading the friggin' race.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But Wayne, you know, you help him out, and you guys have some pretty good success.
We did. We did good.
Yeah.
I mean.
Yeah, because, you know, right around that time, you start working with.
My daughter.
And Rusty.
Well.
Tell us a Rusty Poland go-kart story.
Oh, boy.
Yeesh.
We had some good times.
Yeah.
We had some good times. And Rusty wasn't scared of her. We won quite a few races together.
Because, you know, go-karts were new, really, at the time. To, you know, Southern Maine, Joe Pastore came in with his wife, Donna, and they, you know, started that whole Southern Maine karting thing. What was it like to learn how to set up go-karts? That seems like it's a different beast than coupes.
I can tell you one thing. Wayne could set up a race go-kart.
Really?
Wayne was good at it.
Mm-hmm.
And I went down and talked with him, and he says, come down. He says, we're going to scale it and stuff tonight. So I watched how he scaled it and how you got the weight to the left side and all that stuff. Rusty go out there and just blow them away.
Yeah, because you guys go all around the country, don't you?
Yeah, we traveled for a few years. We did divisionals and nationals, so we were closest race was like a couple in New Hampshire, and we'd go all the way down to Florida, Indiana, North Carolina, yeah. All that stuff.
What's that place we went to up country there that go up over that hill and then down?
Beaver Run, Pennsylvania. It was literally the copy of Pocono.
Yeah.
But you'd go up a hill to the first corner, it was a sharp left, you go back down a hill to like a less than 90 degree corner.
Wow.
That you all had to pretty much, it was whoever could drive the furthest down in and yeah. Hit the brakes last and not spin out.
Well, Rusty, you end up moving in the stock cars probably what, 2012, 13?
Yeah, I ran a kid's truck at White Mountain for like a year, and I think 2010.
Mm-hmm.
And the end of that season, we bought our first Sport Series car off of Gordon Nelson.
Yeah.
And we spent 2011 getting it together, getting it race ready and all that. And I think we ran a few races the end of that year. And then I ended up breaking my ankle the next year.
How'd you do that?
I happened to be at the Cusack's camp and jumped off a dock trying to do a cannonball and splashed Justin Cusack, and just so happened the black water didn't show that it was like 2 feet deep, three feet deep. So I shattered my growth plate.
Yeah.
Then Phil Pinkham actually drove the car a couple races. My dad came out of retirement and tried, and he wrecked it pretty good.
Yeah.
And then we finally built our last Sports Series car that we had that we did the passports and stuff with the boo bars and all that. I think that was 2012 when we did that.
That was a real neat time. So, Chum, you're in your 60s, 70s, really, getting into another generation of Poland's racing. You tell me about working with Rusty in some of those early days.
Yeah, it was a good time.
Yeah.
We spent a lot of time making sure everything was right. And Rusty could wheel her. And he did that.
You know, you've worked with the greats. You've worked with Jerry Seavey. You've worked with Pete Peterson, Jeff Stevens. And let's come back just real quick. I want to ask about the 44 again. You say Jeff Stevens obviously was known as a 44 for a good part of his career. Did he get that from you? Is that what you were telling
me?
Yeah.
Yeah. Matter of fact, it was at a 250 at Oxford.
Yeah, I remember him being the 44.
Yeah. And he said to me, he says, do you have anything to do tonight? And I said, not really.
Yeah.
Rusty was all done and everything. I said, no, not really. Why? He says, come down, give me a hand. I said, sure.
Yeah.
So I went down, gave him a hand. Of course, being Jeff Stevens, he'd get her up through the pack, no problem.
Yeah.
And he won it, and he says, boy, oh boy, he says, why can't you come to work for me? And I said,
yeah.
I can't drive to Biddeford or wherever you lived then.
Yeah, Kennebunk or something.
But
yeah.
Kennebunk. Yeah, it was Kennebunk.
Yeah, I think that's really neat that the 44 came from you.
Yeah, but he asked me, he said, would you be ticked off? He said, for put 44 on this car? I said, not at all. I've always had it.
Yeah.
And
because that translates into Jeff getting hooked up with Richard Moody.
Mm-hmm.
And then Richard Moody and, obviously all the people that have driven that race car since Jeff Stevens all comes from Kenneth and Chummy Brown. I think that's wicked neat.
Yeah. A lot of stuff that I can't remember and stuff, but
you remember plenty.
And I'd do it all over again if I was younger.
Yeah. It's a good life.
It is.
It's a really good life.
It is.
You're still enjoying it. I just want to take a second to read a couple of words to you and tell me what these words mean to you as I read them. The happiest days of my life as a child and even today as an adult, spending time at the racetrack, but my most favorite are the ones I get to work and stand beside my dad. He is the man that taught me my passion and love of the sport. And to see him enjoy that same passion and love with his grandson is beyond words. You can see the joy in my dad's eyes at every single race.
I think I'm a pretty good words.
Yeah. And they come from Angela, Rusty's mom.
Yeah.
I mean, you've worked with all the greats. You know, you work with a pretty great race car driver today. You know, what's it like to experience life as an 85-year-old with your family and have the respect that you do?
I think I've done pretty well.
You started off in 1949 at Beechridge when it started. Day number one, you were there. There's a photo that is out on the final day of Beechridge, and you're there.
Yeah.
Can you tell us about what that final day was like for you?
That was probably the best day of my life. With Rusty doing it and everything with me, it showed. It showed.
Can you tell us what happened that day?
We finished.
We were 7th or 8th in the race, I think. Pretty sure is where we ended up. We had to drive Derek's car that night because I'd wrecked my car the week before at Star. Chum and I had to work all week to get Derek's car put together and everything switched over and all that just to even make the race.
Sounds like you get a lot of gratitude, you know,
for
the life that you lived, you continue to live. Rusty Poland's been our co-host here today. And Rusty, is there anything that you've ever wanted to ask your grandfather that you've never really thought of until this opportunity?
When you spend as much time together as the two of us have for as long as, 29 years now, realistically, there's not much you don't get a chance to either overhear so you never have to ask or to just straight up come out and ask. There's times when we'll be working on the race car, and honestly, I have the podcast on in the garage when we're working on the race car and stuff like that, and I might hear a story and be like, you remember that?
Yeah.
Or I can remember him talking about something like, well, what was that like? And, you know, kind of like you're doing right now. It's the same thing. It's just I get to do it throughout 29 years, not 2 hours of just trying to stuff it all in, you know. So it's most everything I had, I've always just got answered for me on the spot when it came to my mind.
What's the best advice he ever gave you?
Biggest thing he gave me was probably I was younger. And like he said, my dad always used to be really bad at restarts and stuff. And Chum had sat me down one day and said, we will fix this race car every week if that's what it takes. But you do not lay back and you don't take anyone's
How old were you?
Oh, I think I was still in go-karts then. So I was probably 12. But it got reiterated numerous times throughout the rest of my big car stuff.
Yeah. Speaking of the big car stuff, running super modifieds, that's got to be, that had to be a rush the first time that you did it. How much has he been able to help you transition from go-kart to late model to super late model to super modified?
Oh, he's been there every step of the way. He was there. Him and my dad built the first Sport Series car together. When we got our pro stock, he was there through all of that. Dad ended up really sick, actually. Christ, 7-8 years ago now, and it pretty much turned into he wasn't gonna be able to do it anymore like he used to, but he was like, you know, if you want to go racing, the operation's yours, have at it. And quite literally for 6 years probably, it's Chum and I. When I say I'm going to the race shop, it means I'm going to get Chum and we're gonna go to the race shop, and I don't know when we'll be home when we're done for the night. Just we work on the race cars, we prepare the race cars, we do as much as we can ourselves, just like he did would back working on the J2 and stuff like that. And you know, he was, when I drove the Tour Type modified at Lee, he was with me there when we got our win. He's been there for all the super modified races. There's not really much he misses.
I remember being at Star a couple of years ago What happened to you? Did you fall on your face?
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah. What happened there?
Oh, God.
I come see
I
you.
I was running down to get to him.
83 years old, running through the pits at Star.
Yeah. And I don't know why. Well, the 93.
Yeah, Ryan Green was coming in the pit. Pad.
Yeah.
And here I am doing about 35, 40 mile an hour on my feet.
Yeah.
I tried to stop, and I went head first.
But you just got up.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah. My wife was so mad at me when I got home. She said, what the hell ails you anyway? And I says, well,
it's just racing.
It's the way it is.
Yeah. Yeah. It is, you know. And, Chum, it's been an absolute blast to have you here. You're just an encyclopedia of amazing racing knowledge. So I appreciate you taking time out of your day. I know you guys have races to get to and race cars to prepare, but it's been amazing to have you as a guest on the podcast.
Appreciate it.
Thanks.
Appreciate it very much.
You know, at the end of these, I almost always just either I say it out loud or I think to myself, I'm really glad that we did that. You know, Chummy Brown, amazing guest. I thank him for being very generous with his time and also to his grandson, Rusty Poland. So next time out, you know, we went from somebody who was at Beech Ridge on day number one. Well, the next guest was racing for a championship on what turned out to be the last day at Beech Ridge. But Beech Ridge wasn't the only place that he succeeded. He also has a famous and infamous brother. You know, if I was going to make the Trevor Sanborn purchase, there's no way that I wasn't doing the Corey Sanborn buy-up.
No, we're just,
we're
the
just
truth.
Wondering how you got involved in all those messes.
Oh, I just was horrible. No other explanation.
Yeah.
It was the fanciest of stuff that Steve and Gardner were building. Hmm. And it had a manual rack, no power steering. And I remember asking Gardner about it, and he said, if you aren't strong enough to steer it, you probably don't belong in one of these cars. Which was awesome because it was the truth.
Yeah, that's right. Sanborn Brothers, next time out on Open Trailer Podcast.